Stewart.
This is Gray Maynard.
This is Frankie the Answer Edgar.
This is Jordan Breen.
This is Sarah Kaufman.
This is Chris Lights Out Lytle. You listen to MMA Sucker Radio.
Hello, hello, everybody out there in internet radio land. This is MMA Sucker Radio on MMASucker.com and MMACanada.net. And what a freaking awesome show we have today. Again, I said before the show, I posted it on Facebook, this is a show you could wrap up and put it under someone's tree and say, here you go. So we have Jeremy Brand here, producer Jeremy Brand, sitting beside me as always. And we have our special guest co-host, Steve Muhlhausen from Fight Club Chicago. Steve, I hope I got your last name right.
You did, fella.
Perfect. Okay. Awesome, Steve. Welcome to the show, dude. How's it going?
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas to everybody out in internet land, especially you guys in Canada. Not doing bad, my man. Just sitting here in my room after a long weekend and looking at Caesar's Palace right now, actually.
Yeah, you do the show in Chicago, but you're out in Las Vegas, I take it. What were you doing out in Vegas?
Fight Summit was taking place this weekend out here at the Flamingo. It's like a 3-day business conference, more or less, for upcoming fighters, promoters, and people like trying to get into business, whether it's print, internet. And I had got asked by the guy who was running it, Mike Halbin, and the public relations director, Phil Landis. They had emailed me asking me if I can cover the event for him. I had done some work with Phil and had some of his guys on and everything, and I've done some work with him, I'm like, more than definitely. So got out here to the Flamingo and had a great time. A lot of big names out here, a lot of good speakers. You know, you had guys like John McCarthy, you had Greg Jackson, Randy Couture spoke today, you had Mark Pavlovich, my guy, you know, yeah. Mark Pavlovich from
MFC.
He was out here, so it was good to talk to Mark a little bit. Ed Soares, manager of the Stars, it seems like, when he was out here. Ken Pavia, Monty Cox,
wow.
You name it, they were here. A lot of big names here. It was a good experience to cover the event, got great interviews, got a lot of good insider tips, and I actually can break one for you right now, if that's perfectly okay with you guys. And had a nice little talk with Randy Couture after he spoke and everything, and he told me that he approached the UFC last week and he wants to fight Lyoto Machida.
Yeah, well, there were some rumors circulating around that that Randy was, you know, thinking about retiring, but there was maybe one or two guys he still wanted to sort of test himself against. So he's now saying he wants Lyoto Machida.
He did talk, that is correct, he did talk to the UFC last week while he was out shooting in Michigan, and he had his conversation and told them that he wants to fight Machida, and I had a very great 2-hour conversation with Ed Soares, some on air, some off air stuff with Ed, and he was saying on air that they approached the UFC and Lyoto wants to fight Randy, so hopefully the fight does get me. I think it's a fight that I think stylistically suits Randy. I think it's a situation where he was offered a fight with John Jones, he was offered a fight with Rampage Jackson. And it seemed like more the style of a Machida or a Shogun, I think, suits him better than who he wants to face. And he's Randy Couture. I think he's earned that right to pick and choose who he wants to face.
Absolutely. Any word on when something like that could go down in 2011 at all?
He is hoping, he really doesn't know, because the Expendables is more than likely they're going to start shooting that in March.
Yeah.
So, My best guess would be Machida's going to... They'll probably give Machida, I think, not a tomato can fight, but they'll give him a fight that they think he can win. I was bouncing around with some people today, maybe a Matt Hamill. A guy that's like right outside the top 10, on the verge of the top 10.
Yeah.
A guy like maybe like Hamill, and then an assumption, I would think that fight would take place. You know, UFC just announced this week they're going to be going to Brazil at the end of August next in 2011, so I think maybe that could be a possibility.
Could you see him fighting Machida even if Machida loses to that fight?
No.
Yeah, no, I don't see that.
The fight that makes no sense, because when I was talking to Randy, and he thought Machida beat Jackson, which a lot of people really did think Machida won. You go by pride rules, you know Machida wins.
Yeah.
The first time I watched it, I had Machida winning, and I rewatched it a couple other times after that, and I had Rampage winning. So it's just, everyone's got a different style, and view things differently, and the judging the sport these days, you don't really know what's going to happen.
Exactly. Well, Steve, thanks for joining us, and thanks for the scoop, for sure. That's awesome. We got a great show. We got Gray Maynard coming up, and Anthony McKee coming up as well. And so, hey, just want to get your thoughts, though. Did you happen to watch the last WEC show, WEC 53?
I was there. I didn't put anything up on it, which I do apologize to everybody out there for. I know you guys. Somehow people like me up in Canada. I don't know why. And I thank everybody for that for always tuning in and listening. But great card. People thought it was a lackluster card. You got some surprises. You know, Chalarus being Palaszewski, which a lot of people, it was a mild upside considering how Chalarus looked against Jamie Varner in June, and then how Palaszewski's looked lately. You know, he's been looking really good. Had three straight wins and was. You could have talked to him about another, if he had won, and could have had another fight to a title shot. I thought so that was a little bit of a surprise. Cerrone, you really want, it's what basically you were expecting. You know, Hordecki looked good in the first round, and then, you know, Cerrone took him to task in the second round. And I think Hordecki maybe should go down to 45. He looked a little out of shape going into the fight. You know, I think maybe 45 would, I think, suit him.
Yeah, even Cerrone. Even Cerrone said that before they even fought. He thinks he should be fighting at 145.
Oh, he should be. You know, I think it's a better situation for him. And I talked to Sean Tompkins about that yesterday. Man, he said it's a decision that they're contemplating. From what they've been told, USC is going to keep him. So, you know, at least he'll get one fight to prove himself. And, you know, hopefully, you know, 45 will do him good. You know, get a couple fights. And whoever the champion's going to be at 45, if Aldo don't move up, then you can go from there. Cerrone looked excellent, I thought, and, you know, once again, calling out Cole Miller, and for what happened with Leonard Garcia a couple of years ago, and I did talk to Cole Miller and everything, and Cole heard everything, so Cole Miller said, win, lose, or draw, after Matt Wyman, at Fight for the Troops, he wants to fight Donald Cerrone, so hopefully that happens. Dominic Cruz fought the fight, even Scott Jorgensen predicted. You knew what you were getting. I don't want to say a snooze fest, but, you know, Dominic Cruz did what Dominic Cruz does. And, you know, he does enough to win.
Yeah.
Whether that suits the fans, not really. But he wins fights, and that's, at the end of the day, that's the most important thing, is getting your hands raised at the end.
Okay, here's a question for you. Got a question for you. We'll go right to the main event here, because we got 2 minutes here before we got Mr. Before we get the bully on. Anthony Pettis, Showtime kick. Where were you? And, well, not so much where were you, but what were you thinking when you first saw that?
I saw that kick, and it looked like I was watching a Kung Fu Bruce Lee movie. It really looked like I saw that, and we all just kind of looked, we're all sitting there looking at each other, and it's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it was one of the greatest things
I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was kind of one of those things where I was sitting on my couch, and I just kind of stood up, and I go, did I just see that?
Exactly. You know, it was such a great move, and depending on how you scored it, I had a 3-1 Henderson going into the fifth.
Really?
I thought he had done enough, and I thought he had done enough to get to that point. And some people had a 2-2. It's just depending. Everyone views fights differently. And I thought Titus needed a knockout, and Titus got it. And now he moves on to face the winner of Gray Maynard, and who we're going to have here coming up, and Frankie Edgar. And, you know.
Yep.
It's a pick 'em fight, and, you know, Pettis moves on, and we've seen the last of Benson Henderson. Ben's a great fighter, and we will see Ben again.
Speaking of Gray Maynard, we have the bully with us right now, and, you know, I want to actually give him a little bit of an introduction first. Our first guest hails from Phoenix, Arizona. He fights out of Extreme Couture in Las Vegas. Not only is he undefeated in his MMA career, but he holds the third fastest KO in UFC history at 9 seconds. He is the number one contender for the UFC lightweight title held by Frankie Edgar. He will face Edgar on January 1st at UFC 125. Please welcome to the show the bully, Gray Maynard. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Good, Gray. How's everything going, buddy?
Good, good.
Well, let's get right to it, Gray. What do you got going for Christmas? What does Gray Maynard do for Christmas? Because it must not feel like much of a Christmas right now for you.
Ah, man, I started wrestling when I was 3 years old, so it was always kind of take place between October and March. So I never had a Christmas. It was always training all the way through.
Anything?
High school. college. In college, we always had a tournament on December 29th. So, okay. Yeah, we would have to fly back on Christmas Day and train. And so just typical Christmas for me, working out.
Yeah, definitely. Anything that you've asked Santa for? Anything that you're hoping to get under the tree this year?
Yeah, gold belt.
That's right.
Big fat gold belt.
Yeah. Well, you were also joined here by Steve Muehlhausen from Fight Club Chicago. Steve, you got a question for Greg?
Greg, how is training camp going so far? How is training camp going so far heading into the fight in 2 weeks with Frankie?
Training camp's good, man. I quit smoking halfway through. I quit, stopped drinking hard alcohol like 2 days ago. So, you know, I train once a week. Just a hard training camp.
I'm joking. I know you're joking. You made me really do a good question there.
I was like, wow.
Yeah, you guys are silent. I'm like, they can't be taking me seriously.
Not at all, bro.
No.
Not at all.
We were laughing.
A follow-up to that. What have you done differently to prepare for this fight with Frankie than you did for the first fight a couple years ago?
Well, I mean, every camp, you evolve, and we fought 2.5 years ago, so there's been a lot of changes. And every time you try to change up the camp a little bit, try to add something, you know, and just adjust, especially when you're going up against the top guys in the world. I mean, you got to evolve.
Yeah, and just take a little bit before the fight here. I want to quickly ask you, because I just read this today, and I actually didn't know. For most people who don't know, you're obviously an accomplished high school wrestler, collegiate wrestler. But in 2004, I guess you didn't make the U.S. wrestling team, and then you hooked up with BJ Penn, rolled with him. And is that how you got interested in mixed martial arts?
Yeah, I got done with my college career and didn't quite get to the goals that I had. And that was in 2003. So I moved down to Arizona to train for the 2004 Olympics. I would have had to make 144, 145. So, it's really a tough dream, and man, people have to understand that those guys are given everything they got day in, day out, and it's not a payoff. So, it's a hard road. Mm-hmm. And, I think at that point, I just wasn't prepared for that, you know, and, I ended up retiring in 2004, so I moved back home here in town, and this sport was kind of, it was blowing up here, and so, you know, I was a little fat, and I was like, I got to keep doing some stuff, mm-hmm. and I got to a jiu-jitsu school, and we got back to Penn. And I flew out to help him for Rodrigo Gracie.
Right.
And I got back home, and I ended up joining up with Couture, and that's where it clicked.
Well, that's something I wanted to ask you, Ray. I was talking to Randy earlier, and how much of an influence has Randy Couture been in your career?
I mean, you know, he's not the type of guy that is like, all right, you have to do this, and you know, he don't talk a lot, you know, so, but you kind of do what he does, and I mean, that's huge, you know. He leads by how he trains and how he acts.
How is he in the gym? You know, we've all heard myths and legends about Randy Couture and how he is in the gym. At the age that he still is, are you surprised at how he goes about his fights and how he still is basically out-cardioing all the guys when you guys are training together?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he evolves as well, he trains hard as hell. I mean, I can't believe that he's still going, you know, at 46, you know, that's a long road. You know, he tried out for the world teams, he tried out for the Olympic teams in 90s, 98s, I forgot. But, you know, that's a lot of training throughout his whole career. And he just has a strong mind, you know, and that'll take you a long way.
Just a quick question about Extreme Couture. We actually had a friend of the show, and he fights in MFC, Raging Cajun Johnson, and he went down there for a week and said it was pretty much the most amazing experience he's had, you know, training-wise. So much so he wants to do that sort of preparation before all his fights. What is it about that gym that brings the best out of fighters?
The competition, because if not, you're going to get your ass kicked every day, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's just a great town because it's just a place where everyone comes to train, to fight. I mean, boxing, jiu-jitsu, you know, it's all here. And, I mean, you know, so they come to train. And it's always a great day in the gym. And the coaches are unbelievable. I mean, you just can't beat it.
Yeah.
It's the fight capital of the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's look at January 1st. It's coming up fast. You finally get your title shot. Some say you were overlooked a couple times. Would you agree?
I don't dwell on it. So, you know, it came, and that's all I care about.
Well, go ahead, Trevor.
No, Steve, absolutely. After you.
Great. You know, great. There were a lot of, you know, pundits out there that really didn't give you a chance against Kenny Florian when you guys fought out in Boston at UFC 118. Mm-hmm. What did you do different? What did you do in that fight with Kenny Florian? Did you feel any extra added pressure knowing that if you win this fight, you know you're going to get the title shot at Frankie, at the winner of Frankie and BJ?
Well, I mean, added pressure maybe a little bit. You know, I was a little bit more cautious during the fight. I mean, that's a lot on the line, but you know, I kept to the plan, and just that's kind of how you have to take it, you know, every fight, because there's a lot on the line for every fight.
Were you surprised at anything that you saw in the fight with Kenny that he did?
That I did?
No, that he did.
That he did?
Yeah.
His elbows are really good. There was a couple times he was on the bottom, and he threw a couple just real short, quick elbows that I could feel, you know. And he does have the good bows, I guess. Mm-hmm. Good elbows.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a tough kid, you know.
Yeah.
He's a tough kid, and you know, it was a good win.
You're a fairly, I guess some people consider you a large 155 pounder. Some say that your style isn't as exciting as Frankie Edgar or most recently Anthony Pettis. How have you responded to that criticism? You made mention it a little bit about when you were fighting Kenny Florian that, you know, there was a lot on the line there. So there's, you know, obviously there's that added pressure, but a lot of people call you a safe fighter. Do you think that criticism is fair?
I mean, my fights don't have a lot of, like, where, I would say it's not the, like, ones where it's, like, me getting dropped and drama back and forth, and it's just me controlling them,
mm-hmm.
you know? And, I fought, let's see, I fought Kenny is a lefty, Nate Diaz is a lefty, Huerta was a lefty, Miller was a lefty, Clemente was a lefty, and forgot who else, but it was all in a row,
mm-hmm.
and that's a different style of fight, mm-hmm. you know, so it's a lot slower pace, and people have to understand that, and people don't have to, it's just stuff that you can only know if you train and you know, it's just, it's a different fight completely. It's a lot slower pace or else you're going to get beat.
You have the only lightweight, or you're really the only lightweight to be undefeated in 8 fights. What kind of pressure does that put on you to be undefeated?
Undefeated, you know, I do win, and it's great, but it's over afterwards. It's just, you know, 3 days, it's like, all right, that was a great win. Okay, who's next? You know, so, I don't care about that. You know, it's just, you know, who do I have next? That's all I care about. And, you know, just preparing for them.
No, Kurt, you were talking about.
I'm trying to have 9-0. I'm just trying to win against whoever I'm against.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kurt, you were talking about, you know, after your fight, you take a couple days off and you worry about who you're fighting next. The implications are after this bout, if the winner of your bout will face the winner of Anthony Pettis, since he did beat Benson Henderson on Thursday night. Do you feel that the WEC guys are worthy of coming right into the UFC and getting the winner of the fight with you and Frankie?
What do I feel doesn't matter. It's just who they choose, you know. So, you know, now I have a guy on January 1st that's tough as hell, and, you know, I'm prepared. And then, you know, whoever they choose, that's who I fight. Mm-hmm. That's fine with me. It's a business, you know. It's not my choice.
Right. Yep.
Did you watch the fight on Thursday night with Pettis and Henderson?
No, I don't even own cable, man.
No? No cable?
No.
How do you not have cable, Gray?
I didn't own cable growing up, and then me and my girl, we bought cable like a long time ago. And I remember I came home and I flipped through the channels, like 300 channels or something, for a half hour. And then I got to a channel what I kind of liked. I didn't even care. I was just like, I'm tired of flipping through these damn channels. And I watched the show for a freaking hour that I didn't even care about. And then afterwards, I sat there and I said, damn, I just wasted an hour and a half on some shit that I didn't even want to watch. You know what I'm saying? And I told my girl right there, I said, we're done. We're done. I'm not doing it anymore.
So,
are you married, Chris?
What? No, No, I've had a girl 11 years, though.
So you haven't seen the Showtime kick, the highlights, anywhere?
No, I haven't checked it out, but I usually check out all the scraps, you know. But, you know, if I'm in camp, then I don't feel like driving over to whoever's house, and, you know, I just kind of stay home. But, you know, I'll watch it eventually.
Well, let's talk about Frankie Edgar. Is it weird to come into this fight currently as the you are the favorite, when you don't actually hold the title?
Yeah. I don't even keep up with all that stuff either.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, you know, I know who I have, and you know, I prepare for him, and you know, I think a lot of people, you know, it's like, oh, he's evolved, and he looks great, and he beat Penn, and you know, so, you know, I kind of try to say, like, all right, well, you know, I'm the underdog, so
yeah,
you know, I got to prove it.
Well, you bring
like now. Prove...
Sorry, go ahead.
Now, Curry, with you know, the fight coming up on New Year's Day, do you feel that you have a need to, you know, try to finish the fight, because, you know, a lot of things have been going on lately with the judging, and does the judging affect the way you go into a bout?
I mean, the judges, I mean, obviously you try to do you try to score points, of course, and you look to end it at all times, but against the top guys in the world, you know, it's really the small things that will it's a tough fight. And you got to be prepared for those fights. So, you know, I mean, of course, it's a deal. It's like, well, know, I'm trying to finish it, but, you know, if it isn't there, it isn't there against a good guy.
And Edgar is a good guy. He brings a lot of speed.
And as the sport evolves, mm-hmm. it's going to be there's going to be a lot closer and closer fights.
Yeah.
You know, a lot. This sport's changing so quick, and, you know, the top guys, you know, it really will be a dogfight and a lot of close fights, you know.
Edgar, he brings a lot of speed. Likes to keep his feet moving. He kind of works as like a range type fighter. What are you working on to combat that speed and that boxing advantage?
Advantage? I'd have to disagree with you on that.
Yeah.
A little bit, but I'll just have to prove that. You know, I'll prove that January 1st. But you know, I spar with, you know, a lot of pros who are really, really good, you know. And I'm prepared for it. You know, anything he brings, I'm prepared for.
Who are some of the guys that you've worked with, Gray, to combat, to counteract Frankie's boxing?
Pro boxers, a lot of pro boxers. You know, I've been going with them. I've been with Gil Martinez now. He's a pro coach. And, you know, he has a small gym with a lot of good pros. And, you know, I've been with him for... you know, 3 years now. So, you know, I box a lot.
What do you make of that misconception that people say that you're just a guy that takes people down? Because we really haven't seen a lot of your stand-up. What are you going to say to the critics out there and to the fans that say, oh, Gray Maynard's like, he's a one-trick pony, like how people criticize Jake Shields in that same essence?
Jim Miller fight, Nate Diaz fight, that was all stand-up. Jim Miller fight was all stand-up. Huerta fight was mainly all stand-up. I mean, I don't know how to prove that, you know. And those, I just, you know, that was the plan for them. But the plan for, like, a Florian was, you know, half the fight was that. But then half the fight, you know, I took him down.
Yeah.
I think it's the fans are, you know, I guess it's, what have you done for me lately? And that's unfortunate, you know, because I remember the Miller fight, I remember the Diaz fight, I didn't know where to fight, and that's exactly what you did do. So, you know, I think the fans, I think, you know, because like you said, you know, the sport's finally starting to evolve, and the more the fans get educated and they watch previous fights with different type of fighters instead of just looking, you know, what you've done for me lately, society.
And I understand the fans. That's who pays the bills, you know, that's the whole thing. That's a part of a sport, is to be able to say, like, oh, I hate this guy. This guy should do this. This guy should do that. Mm-hmm. And that's perfectly fine. But I'm in a gym with my coaches, and those are the people I pay attention to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, totally.
So I keep to myself, and of course people will talk, and that's fine. You know, that's what makes the sport great, is that a lot of people have an opinion.
You're not known as a trash talker, nor do we hear a lot from you in interviews. Are you a guy that likes to stay pretty much out of the spotlight? And if you become champ, obviously you'll receive a lot more attention. Are you ready for that?
Am I ready for what? Attention?
Yep, all the attention that you're going to get. Yeah.
You know, I didn't choose the sport for, like, well, you know, Chuck, man, he was at a club and he had all kinds of girls. Like, I want that. You know, it was more of, you know, I saw a Hughes fight and I was like, man, I can beat these guys. It was more of me trying to prove it, you know, to be on top, you know. So whatever comes, it comes. And you know, I'm not the guy that is like, everybody pay attention to me, I'm gonna do some stuff to make you look at me more. You know, I'm not a gimmick, I guess.
No.
There's a lot of guys that turn into fucking just, that's all they do, that's
characters.
All they care about.
Yeah.
And you know, I fight, and I'm me.
And your fighting does the talking.
Yeah, I talk sometimes, you know. I'm talking to you right now, too.
And we appreciate it.
You made a comment about how a lot of fighters talk, you know, they talk too much and just focus more on the fighting. Guys like a Sean McCorkle, you know, talked his way basically into a co-main event bout against Stephen Struve. What do you make of guys like that? And then when they talk like that, then they don't back it up in the cage. What do you think about guys like that? Or just an example like a McCorkle.
I don't know, like, you know, who that is too much, I guess. But, I mean, that's up to you, I guess. I mean, I, if it's there, if the guy's an asshole, I'm going to tell him he's an asshole. But, you know, I have a guy who, you know, he's a tough kid, and he's a cool kid, too. And so there's no point to talk shit. You know, we're two guys that we train hard and we'll be prepared, you know, to scrap on January 1st. So there's no talking involved.
Do you, how important for you, and I've just started recently training, and just today, one of the things that was hammered home is visualization. How important is that to you?
Oh, it's huge. It's a big part of the game, and you know, again, you have to evolve it, and you know, it's a big part of the game. I learned that actually a long time ago. Went to a Dan Gable camp, and that was a big part of it.
And what are you visualizing on January 1st?
I'm visualizing me kicking his ass, KOs. I mean, it goes a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to be prepared for everything, and you know, that's just kind of how it goes. Just a lot of stuff goes through your head, but it's all wins.
You're listening to Gray Maynard here on MMA Sucker Radio on MMASucker.com and MMACanada.net. Just a couple more questions for you here, Gray. Moving away from the fight, you were obviously on the Ultimate Fighter 5. Do you stay in touch with any of those guys in the cast that maybe you had befriended at all or anything like that?
I talked to Matt Wyman if he's around. Talked to Joe Lazone. You know, mm-hmm. There's a couple guys who I still talk to.
Cool.
You know, if
they're... how was your experience on the Ultimate Fighter, Greg?
Is it right if I curse on here?
Absolutely. Curse all you want.
Yeah, it fucking sucked, man. It fucking sucked bad. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What?
No, that's what I get from a lot of people. On my show out in Chicago, where we had talked to Kyle Watson a couple times and Andy Main, and they said the same thing. It's like, you're basically away from everything. You have nothing. You're away from the world for 6 weeks, and you're with a bunch of guys, and you're rooming with everybody, and everyone's getting frustrated. But based off on your experience for that, if you get asked to ever coach the Ultimate Fighter, would you go ahead and coach the show?
Yeah, I mean, of course. You know, I was... you know, I helped coach on a couple years, and it's a lot easier to leave, you know, like, all right, we're going to train, and then you leave, but to be on the show, it's the worst. It's like jail, man. You know, you're gym home, and it's all kinds of dudes who you're going to have to fight.
Yeah.
So, you know, I put it like jail with a nice house and some good food.
Just... a fight that happened in the Ultimate Fighter here, and would you like another shot at Nate Diaz somewhere down the line?
I just fought him last year in January.
And would you like another opportunity at guys?
Would I like to fight Nate Diaz again?
Yeah.
I mean, again, I take this as a job. you know, and it's whoever they tell me to fight, you know. You know, if I lost to him, then I'd want that back bad. But, you know, I got a tough kid on January 1st, and that's all I care about.
Exactly.
You know, I don't look past anybody. You know, and for me, you know, it's a job. Whoever they tell me to fight, that's who I fight. And, you know, I come prepared.
Last question for you. I just read that you're co-starring in a movie alongside Ving Rhames and Ernie Reyes Jr. Yeah. It's called Submission. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I worked with Ernie Reyes Jr., him, and we did it a while ago, and then we did some more scenes before the fight with Nate Diaz. So, it's a cool movie. I think it comes out in the springtime, and it was my first time doing the action thing. And, you know, for me at my career now, it's a little bit more more annoying than I want to pursue that a lot more, because, you know, I fight, you know, I'm trying to train every day, and those are like actual days where you're like doing stuff for 12-14 hours, it was kind of it was a tough job.
So you don't want to become the next action star after your fighting career is over?
Well, after my career is over, you know, I don't know what I want to do, but you know, that's a possibility, because it does have some good cash in it, you know, and it is cool. But for now, I'm concentrating on my career, on my fight career.
Awesome, great. Thank you for joining us. Your fight is against Frankie Edgar on January 1st. You're the number one contender. You're also the favorite. You know what? Any last shout-outs you want to make? Any sponsors, anything like that you want to shout out?
Yeah, High Tech, The Throne, XCAP. I don't know. There's probably a bunch of them that I'm forgetting. I get punched in my head a lot, so forget. just check out my shorts on January 1st, and you'll see them all.
Awesome, Gray. We really appreciate it. You got some fans here, and I know a lot of fans across North America right now that are listening that will definitely be cheering you on. So thank you so much for joining us, and good luck to you, sir.
Hey, thank you, guys. Appreciate you having
me on.
Thank you, Greg. Awesome.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Later. Gray Maynard, the number one contender for Frankie Edgar, the answer. His belt on UFC 125 on January 1st, and good interview. And by the way, I totally fucked up that question with Nate Diaz. Somebody on Facebook sent me that question.
What do you make of the fight with Frankie? You know, he is the favorite going out here in Vegas. He is the betting line. I think it's like a plus 130.
Yeah.
He is out here right now. And what do you make of the betting odds in that fight, or in just the fight in general? Who do you think wins the fight?
You know what? I'm really going with Gray Maynard. It's hard not to. I really like Frankie Edgar. I think Frankie Edgar has definitely evolved, especially his striking. His striking has just gotten better and better every fight. I mean, I find it funny that Gray thinks that, you know, he actually holds the striking advantage. I don't know if I completely agree with him on that, but again, I haven't seen enough of Gray Maynard striking to really make a comment on that. But I do know that a lot of people see Frankie the Answer Edgar's striking to be a little bit more superior. So, as well as Frankie's speed. I mean, let's be honest, he's a small 155-pounder. And I think speed, if Frankie can work on his speed and his takedown defense, I mean, he doesn't really have to work on his speed because he already has it, but if he can work on his takedown defense as well, I think he's got a good shot of maybe picking apart Gray Maynard. But I just see Gray Maynard's wrestling. We've seen this movie before. I've seen Gray Maynard's wrestling is just too good. I really ultimately think he's going to take Frankie Edgar down at some point in a five round fight and probably beat the crap out of him. So I am going for Gray Maynard, and I can understand why he is the favorite going in. What do you think?
You know, it's a thing where, you know, people thought the same thing with EJ Penn, that he was going to take down Frankie. He was going to go at him at will, and know, to Frankie's credit, he worked on his boxing. His boxing was fantastic in both bouts. Speed was better than what everyone had anticipated. And he suffered a lot of takedowns. Did he get taken down a couple times? Yeah, but you know what? He took his lumps and then he got right back up. And
yep.
It's going to be the key for Brandon Maynard. If he can't take down Frankie Edgar, it's going to be the same thing as BJ Penn. It's going to be a five-round brutality by Frankie Edgar. And I think Frankie Edgar will once again prove the critics wrong, especially out here in Vegas and around the world. And mm-hmm. he will walk out still with the UFC lightweight title and go on and face Anthony Pettis.
Which I know a lot of people want to see.
You know, because a lot of people were thinking it was going to be him and Benson Henderson.
Yeah.
You know, now me, you know, got shut up on a little bit. A lot of people got shut up on that. And you never know, Gray Maynard's a great fighter. You know, and the guys, he's undefeated for a reason. He's mm-hmm. beaten Frank Yeager. He's beaten Nate Diaz. He's beaten Jim Miller, who just won last week, who looked really good. He beat Roger Huerta. So he's beat a lot of tough guys. Everyone underestimates Gray Maynard because he's a one-trick pony in a lot of people's minds. But Gray Maynard will bring it on January 1st.
Yeah. I know personally, when Anthony Pettis won, I immediately thought Frankie Edgar. I want to see that fight because those are two smaller 155-pound guys. I would love to see that kind of action. That'd be a fast-paced fight. I know the UFC would love to see that because, you know, if Henderson would have won, then yeah, let's see Gray Maynard go against Henderson and see two wrestlers, you know, go at it. But now for me, I just think Gray Maynard has just got the size advantage and the wrestling ability to win this fight, but you know, I would love to see a fast paced fight with Frankie Edgar and Anthony Pettis.
Do you ever think that Gray Maynard would move down any like the three guys, Maynard, Edgar, and Pettis? You ever see them maybe moving down to 45?
I don't know, man. I don't think there's really any need for them to do that right now. I mean, I could see maybe Gray Maynard moving up one day, but I mean, who knows? I mean, it all depends on sort of where they're at in their career, but there's no real reason for a guy like Frankie Edgar to move down one because he's the champ. But I mean, I get what you're saying is that, you know, in some ways, I actually think it's a bit of an advantage to be able to fight at 155 and be in the top five and then be able to sort of, you know, move down to 145 later on in your career. But speaking of which, we're actually going to move on here, and we'll get more into that after. But we are our next guest. He's 40 years old. I have to say that right out the hop because I just think that's amazing. Yeah, he has an amazing MMA record of 33-2. He hasn't lost since 2003. He fought up north for Maximum Fighting Championships, claimed their lightweight title. Finally, he gets his long-awaited shot at the Ultimate Fighting Championships on January 1st at UFC 125. Please welcome the entertaining Antonio McKee. Antonio, how's it going today, buddy?
What's up? I just finished running, man. Y'all just caught me running. I was running. I just finished running, but what's up? How y'all doing?
Sit down and relax.
Antonio, how's it going, brother?
Are you ready? Are you ready, baby? Are you ready for the storm to hit Vegas?
Well Steve.
Are you ready, my man?
Yeah.
And I was born ready. You know that. I've been waiting for 10 years to go to Vegas and fight on the big stage, baby.
Right off the hop here, Antonio, what is going down for McKee this Christmas? What's going down with you? What do you got going?
I already told you, ain't no Christmas this year. It's Kwanzaa. Okay, Jacob Volkman Christmas. No, we're boycotting Christmas and we're going with Kwanzaa this year. Nothing personal. Just
nope.
Business.
Absolutely, and that's what I was just going to ask you because it must be weird because you're training your ass off. And it's the holidays, and everybody's relaxing, drinking eggnog and rum, and there you are, you know, jogging and running
what?
And getting it on.
No, brother. I was just at a party last night. I was out there having fun, drinking some hot tea. See, here's the thing. My mm-hmm. job ain't just done when it's time for a fight. My job is done every day. That's my job as a professional, as a fighter.
Yep.
I get up every day, and I train. I don't miss days of training because it's like missing a day of work.
Yep.
And that's my job. So a lot of these fighters go Hollywood, and you know, they only train 6, 7, 8 weeks out for a fight. But as you can see, I get better and better each fight.
Yeah, man.
Each fight is finished. I get stronger. My charisma, my personality, my conditioning, it gets better and better. So, you know, my job ain't done in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, brother. My job started 10 years ago, and I ain't stopped yet. And I ain't going to stop until I get the belt.
That's a damn good answer. Well, okay. I got to ask you a personal question before we start talking about the fight, because when I was doing the write-up for this show, I noticed that your nickname was Mandingo, and I was like, what the fuck is a Mandingo? So I looked it up.
Okay.
And, yeah. Who in the hell what named you that?
What? First of all, what did you see when you found it?
Okay. Mandingo. Well, personally, I could give myself that nickname, but it just means just extremely large penis.
Okay. This is where I got to educate you.
Okay.
See, there was a movie called Mandingo that gave me a bad image, okay? Mandingos were some warriors from Africa, okay?
Okay.
They didn't communicate with other tribes. They mind their own business, and they would cut, behead the skulls, and eat their prey. But they were the most fierce warriors of Africa. They'd make the Zulu tribes look like virgins. And what happened is they lived up in the mountains and in the higher cave parts of Africa. You know, they really, I don't know the proper verbiage that I'm trying to say, but I know what I want to say, but I'm so hyped up and pumped up about everything that I got to take a second to think about it. But anyway, they were some very fierce warriors, and they were very intelligent, and they did not waste anything that they killed. They ate. They were, they preserved the earth, and then the British government came down and gave the Zulus guns and stuff, and they eventually wiped them all out. But they believed in dying before surrendering, and so eventually they basically just, they, no one really knows what happened to the Mandingos. But if you do the tribal history of it, they are some cool, cool warriors. Now, I have a wrestling program called Warriors,
right?
Because the mothers didn't like their kids being called Mandingo, because they refer to Mandingos as big penis black guys.
That's
no,
right.
I have to educate America once again that a Mandingo, do your homework, because I'm full of subliminal messages to hit you like a pop gun. Do your homework and go archive Mandingos. And that's one of my ancestors. My lineage is from the Mandingo tribe.
That's awesome.
So I'm one of the very few ones that know who they are in America running around. A lot of people don't know their identity, but I know mine.
That's great. We've just been educated. So when you look up Mandingo and you see a big, large black penis, that's not the Mandingo
we're talking about. Is that what they had?
That's apparently what it is.
I mean, I fit that too, but
yeah.
I don't pride myself on that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm married with kids, and
yeah.
You know, I'm a pillar of the community, a mentor of the youth. So I'm constantly educating people 24/7, so I'm used to it. I ain't tripping.
Yeah, all right. Well, let's talk about the MFC here. You tore it up, won their title, and evolved as a fighter, like you just said. What was your experience fighting for that promotion?
Man, despite all the bad stuff I'm hearing Pavlis talk about, how he made Antonio McKee sexy and all this shit, let me tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
You can't make sexy when it's already sexy. The only thing you can do is give me a platform to stand my sexy ass on. Now, God is responsible for making me sexy, and I'm responsible for taking care of myself over the 40 years of trials and tribulations that I've been through. So as far as him saying he made me sexy, must be some insecurity somewhere, because you can't make a man sexy. A man is either sexy or not. And I appreciate and take as a compliment him thinking that I'm sexy. I have nothing bad. I mean, the Pavlis family are very, very hard workers. They're very determined to be the best at what they do in the business. I have nothing but respect for them, even though we've had issues and we've had some drama. But I look past that as people. And again, man, I used to be in the streets and didn't eat and struggle and didn't know whether I was going to make it the next day or not. So I'm so happy and so thankful for all the things that I have. And little stuff like that, I don't let it bother me.
Yeah. Steve?
Now, Antonio, what did you learn from that experience fighting in the MFC, fighting in Canada a majority of the time? What are you going to take out of that and bring it over here to the United States?
Well, you know what I learned? I learned that fighting is more than just winning. Fighting, where it's at today, is about entertainment. See, I came, like I tell people, I didn't come to this sport to be an entertainer. I came to this sport to be the best fighter in the world. And as you slowly see, all these fighters are adapting Antonio McKee's style. I get a lot of fan mail. I get a lot of hits. People are paying attention to me. okay? And I think maybe the long journey was to influence people who God is, because I'm a God believer. You know, a lot of people in the sport don't believe in God. A lot of atheist people that watch the sport and patronize it are atheists. They don't believe in God, and that's probably, it probably makes sense of why they like such barbaric and such dominant people being hurt and mayhem, you know what I mean? I asked the promoter one time, I did a radio show in Canada. Mark Pappas got a little upset with me for the first time in my career. I asked this guy who says he likes to see people get knocked out. So I asked him, what would happen if you saw your mama get knocked out? Oh, I don't like that. I'll tell you what, that's a little harsh. How about if you watched your father get knocked out? Ah, okay, that's your father. How about if you had a son or a friend, a very close friend that you cared about, you watch them get knocked out of their face or their head split open? You know what he told me? Oh, I wouldn't like that. And I said, see, you're the type of person that I don't like. I don't like you because you're so selfish and concerned about what you feel. And it's more America, United States, people. We're much more than just individuals, man. It took all of us to make this sport what it is today. And when you sit back and you want to watch somebody get their face split open or somebody get knocked out and you getting off on that, you're a sick individual if you ask me. Unfortunately, I don't look at the sport as being barbaric and dogmatic like that. And I pray for every opponent that I fight that we both leave that ring safely. And if there's stitches, because I've been giving people stitches lately and I'm moving up from stitches to staples, I immediately go to church and pray and ask God to help heal those people, because the amount of money that they receive for the damage that I've done, I just didn't feel good about it. But I bet it's better me than them, and I pray to God give me more submissions, because I don't want to hurt people like that. Who can stop me from elbowing them in the face? I take everybody down. I get on top of them. You can't stop my takedown. No one's ever stopped me from taking them down. So how could you ever stop me from elbowing your face? I choose not to hurt and maim these people and just out-technique them like GSP. The only difference is I'm a little better at it because my opponents get cut up in these stitches and look real bad in the face. But GSP is slowly adapting the McKee technique, taking them down. He's got their timing. He's hitting them with a jab. He's moving around. He's not taking any damage. And he's the greatest fighter in MMA right now. He's one of my favorite fighters. Not only him, Anderson Silva. Mm-hmm. What is he doing now? He's staying on the outside. 1-2-3 punch. 1-2, move, pop, pop, ping. Oh, I got him hurt. He finishes the opponent. What is the difference in what Antonio does?
Yeah.
What do you make, Antonio, of guys? You know, I remember the controversy with HDNet, and you were on Inside MMA with Bostrom, and then there was a controversy with Guy Mezger saying that you can't finish a fighter, and then you were saying that if you didn't win the fight, if you didn't finish, you were going to retire. Can you explain to the fans how that controversy came about and how that all went down?
This is what happened. These old guys that are my age, okay, because I'm the same age as them. I'm 41 years old in a couple months. Mm-hmm. These guys are my age. They're jealous because I preserved myself and didn't go out there and thrash my body and not make any money in the sport, first of all, because neither one of those guys got paid what it was actually worth at the time they were doing it. Don't be mad at me, because I'm a smart fighter and I choose to go out here and preserve my body and wait for my day in the UFC and the sport to evolve. Like I said 10 years ago, if you hear my interviews from 10 years ago, I've always said that the sport has not evolved around my superiorness of wrestling and grappling. But if you think you can stop me, I challenge each one of them guys to a 3-3-minute round of MMA in a cage where everything goes. I'm the kind of guy that'll do that. Mm-hmm. I put up or shut up, you know what I mean? So there was a bunch of stuff about this and this and that. It actually worked, and it benefited me because they pissed me off, made me angry, and I can't say the N-word no more because me and my wife have a deal. I told her I wouldn't say the N-word, so I'll say ninja.
Yep.
Y'all pissed the ninja off. And when you piss a ninja off, I had to go back to my ninja manhood and grab some of that animosity, that anger, that frustration, that hurt, that pain, and I had to bring it in. And then it didn't help when Alzevedo called me old and senile and he was going to retire me. Man, that you picked the wrong ninja to piss off. I'm the wrong one to fight angry, because I came from such place, and when you push those buttons on me, you're going to get the best out of me. And that's exactly what happened. And I said, look, if this fight goes past the second round, I will not come out to the second round. I will cut my gloves off. And told my wife right before that, that I would win this fight in the first round. Don't worry, baby, sit here. This is going to be quick. And then so it was. But, you know, even after I won the fight, the referee, you know, sends me to the corner, gives me a technical timeout. And I'm telling everybody there's no such thing as a technical timeout in MMA. And then I get a technical victory referee stoppage instead of a TKO. You see what I'm saying? Then I was told, well, you know, McKee, we had a beginner ref in there. Well, if you're the private organization that you say you're, why would you put an amateur ref to host a title fight?
Yeah.
So, again, I exploit those who try to exploit me. And I turned it around, and people go, he's got a point there. That was my thing.
Are you taking that sort of same anger and animosity into UFC 125? Because you are finally on the big stage. You're on the undercard, but I'm pretty much expecting to see you on the main card just because of how good you are. Are you going to take that same anger and animosity into Jacob Volkman?
Now, you know, I've done my homework. One thing people know about McKee is going to research his opponent and study his opponent thoroughly, very thoroughly. I looked at this man. He's a great guy. He's a family man. He's a chiropractor. I mean, he went to college. This man has the life that I dreamed of. I unfortunately have to say, and excuse my language, but you're in the wrong damn place at the wrong damn time. Mm-hmm. I am going in there to handle my business, and the business is the belt. Anything that's in front of me, it's distracting me. I'm going to put pain on it. I'm going to try to get it out of there quick. So I think Volkman is a great guy. After the fight, I would love to shake his hand and pray with him before and after the fight. But I'm going to tell you something, brother. They picked the wrong one to put you up against in UFC 125. But McKee is on a mission. And some people think it's a mission impossible, but those who know me say it's a mission quite possible. We're just waiting for you to get it.
Yeah, because, I mean, let's be honest, you're turning 41 in a couple months, like you said. Some people consider you old. I hate to use that word for this sport.
I love it. Now,
yeah.
When they say, oh, are they referring to me as a black man? Are they referring to me as a human? Because when we used to live to be 150 years old, 200 years old, because we didn't smoke dope, we didn't do steroids, we didn't do growth hormones, we didn't take methamphetamines, we didn't smoke marijuana, because Antonio McKee does none of that. This is why I'm able at 41 years old to get out here with these little young kids who popping pills and steroids and oxys and pain pills and Vicodins and all the man. These cats are crazy. Man, I am truly a champion inside the ring and outside the ring. I'm the kind of guy you want your kids to listen to the story that I tell, because I'm constantly trying to help our youth become better in situations where they're not given and they're not as fortunate as a lot of these other kids like Jacob Volkman. You know, I just give high praise to the guy. But you talking about somebody like me, brother, I came from the streets of struggling, hard knocks, drug addicts, gang-banging thugs, getting shot at, stabbed, in and out of jail. Do you really want to put yourself in a room with me for the amount of money that the UFC is talking about breaking a brother off? Man, I'm not going there just to prove a point. I'm going there to eat. I'm hungry. I'm coming to eat. I got to feed my family. It's going to be a fight. So however it goes, I just know at the end of the day, I'm going to be on top. I ain't going to be on the bottom. I got so much more than what y'all have seen, but I haven't had to use it because no one's brought it out of me. And if Jacob Volkman is the individual that's going to bring this other edge out of McKee, may God bless us all.
Mm-hmm. Steve?
Now, Antonio, what is... Can you talk about your background a little bit? You were talking about your background a little bit. For the fans that don't know a lot about Antonio McKee and are going to see him for the first time coming up in about 2 weeks, can you give us a little bit of a background of your life, a little bit in your career so far?
Okay. Well, I don't want to give you all of it, but I'm going to give you bits and pieces of it because I'm coming out with a book. And this book is not a book that I will benefit profits for, because every proceed that comes from this book will go into the inner cities and help these youth. I would like to get me some farmland, and I would like to take some of these at-risk kids that are about to go to Penn and get caught up in a system that does not rehabilitate but motivate these kids to commit more crimes, and they learn more ways to commit those crimes when they go to jail. But I would like this to be a program where I set up shop for those that can afford this and rehabilitate these kids, because there's nothing that I can't talk about. You know, as a child coming up, I grew up in the inner cities in Nashville, Tennessee. I was abducted at one point by the KKK. I was, you know, thrown. They attempted to throw me over the Shelby Bridge. I hid. I got away. Man, I'm talking about our rent being $14 a month. I lived in the projects called University Courts in Minnesota Bath, and people looked this place up. These were housing projects that the government funded for low-income people. And, man, it was, I call that hell. That must have been hell because I saw people die, I saw people get killed, I saw people get shot. Just the lifestyle. And then, unfortunately, you know, I didn't have the proper family upbringing. I was caught up in the streets of drugs, killing, jacking, robbing, left out on my own around 13, 14 years old. I was homeless, living in the streets, you know, doing everything that I could to survive, to take care of my sister, to pay the rent of the house that we lived in. I did everything that I could, man, and I found a passion for wrestling. My coach took me in. I lived with my coach, and then I learned how to become a citizen. Mm-hmm. And from that point, you know, there's a lot of hardship in there, being in different boys' homes, and there was molestation going on. I was molested as a man coming, as a child coming up, just in the youth facilities, guys raping each other and having sex, and just, you know, it was a lot of sick stuff that I refuse to hide. No, mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about it, and I'm going to put it out there on blast because there's so many kids that have things that have happened to them that have happened to me. Sexually molested, I think a lot of us have been sexually molested or fondled in some form or fashion. Unfortunately, I was molested by a woman, so it wasn't as severe as being molested by a man. And then even in those facilities, the men would have sex with these boys in these group homes. I mean, you know, the book that I'm writing is, I told my wife, I hope they don't kill me because I'm going to expose things that most people go to bed thinking that this couldn't have happened, this doesn't happen, it doesn't exist. From parents being influenced by drugs and alcohol and just being kicked out of the house for no reason. I mean, just everything bad that could have happened, happened, but I put the flip on it and I made positive of these things and I've created a way to embrace that and push forward and make good things happen. So, you know, now I'm fighting at 41 years old. Well, you know, that's old to those who have not taken care of themselves, who smoke crack, who've done steroids and abused their bodies. But this is my temple, and I praise it to the utmost respect. And so I've taken care of myself. So I've matured a little bit as far as in age. I'm about 15 years behind mm-hmm. because of the lifestyle that I had, because of the way I was brought up, because of the street environments and the survival instincts that I developed. So it was very difficult for me to take authority, to take when someone tells me something, because all my life I've had to do for me. There was not a higher person there telling me, look, this, that, this, and this. And I had to learn all this stuff the hard way. I didn't learn about racism until I had money.
Hmm.
But when I was a poor guy, you know, you was white, I was white, you was my homie, whether we was black or white or Mexican, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
So then I had to mature and adjust again and deal with the racism a little bit different. And people say, oh, McKee tried to pull a race card about the UFC. Man, I asked some questions. And I said that people were biased toward me, and I didn't have the right vocabulary, which I'm working on now. I let everybody know. I didn't graduate high school. I went to college, and I'm a very smart individual, very articulate, but sometimes my brain is functioning faster, so I say things without thinking about it, and I'm starting to learn how to take a second to think before I said, but I felt that I had been basically, I'm no different than GSP. I'm no different than Koscheck. I'm no different than Sean Sherk, Matt Hughes. I'm no different than Gray Maynard. I'm no different at all. I'm no different than Frankie Edgar. So why are you people biased toward Antonio McKee's style of fighting, which he's found it to be effective, and I've never been on my back. I haven't lost in 7 years. I'm the only guy with a winning streak that's like that.
Yep.
Why have you tried to destroy my character, my image, when all I do is go out on the weekends and put food in people's houses, put put furniture in people's houses, mentor the youth, speak at the churches, speak for the high-risk kids. I'm there to understand these people. Why do these people say bad things about me and they don't know me? You don't know me?
Yep.
So to say some of these hurtful things as a professional athlete, it hurts me that we live in such a society that's such judgmental about what they think they know. Get to know me, and that's why I just recently released a video, Get to Know Antonio McKee. Step in my world. Carry a gun and go into the low-income areas that I go into. Feed the families that don't have food. Feed the people knowledge and wisdom. I just took a family, and me and my wife, out of our own pockets, we put a Christmas tree in their house. We gave them money for them to go Christmas shopping for their kids. Now this lady is diagnosed. Her sister was diagnosed with cancer. She passed and left four kids. She has seven kids living in a two-bedroom house. Why don't other people do what I do? Because if we did, we'd have a great world. People would be happy, but we're so greedy and selfish, and we want everything to ourselves, and we want more and more and more, which I don't give a shit about the money, because as soon as I get the UFC knockout bonus, God knows what I'm going to do. I'm going to go help some people. I'm going to go help somebody.
You're listening.
If your radio station is doing bad, I donate money to the radio station.
Well, you're listening to...
I've been self-trained. I've been self-trained, self-managed, self-disciplined, self-sacrifice, and people want to know why I want to talk. I got a lot of shit to say.
Yeah. And you have a lot of great stuff to say. You're listening to Antonio McKee here on MMA Sucker Radio on MMASucker.com and MMACanada.net. Antonio, I want to ask you this because you had mentioned that when you had gotten to wrestling and you sort of had those mentors in your life that you became a better person. How important is it nowadays? I mean, do you promote kids getting into mixed martial arts at a young age to maybe help them deal with those things?
Absolutely, but we need to first educate society on their sickness. It's not about making somebody bleed. It's not about busting somebody's head open or breaking somebody's arm or knocking somebody out. But it's about the sport of dominance. And I am a dominant wrestler with superior grappling techniques, and I beat everybody with this technique. So I think it's a great place for kids to go and vent. Man, do you know I won 98% of my wrestling matches I won because I was angry, and that was where I vented. Instead of going out shooting and doing drive-bys with the homies, I was at wrestling practice, and I'll tell you a quick story, true story. Mm-hmm. Yep. One day I was supposed to go hang out with my partners. They paged me on my page. I was like, man, I'm too tired. I just got done wrestling practice. I got to make way for a tournament. Well, they went out. I met a bum. This bum was a multimillionaire in his time and there. His name was Eddie Rico Jr. Mm-hmm. So he told me, he said, youngster, every morning you get up, he said, you got to always read what the white man is doing. And I was like, what are you talking about? He was like, always read the newspaper so you'll see what's going on in the world. So I developed this habit to read the newspaper every morning. Long story short, I was supposed to be out Friday night hanging with the fellas. I decided not to. The next morning was Saturday. I was at a tournament. I grabbed me a press telegram, and my homies, four of them, got shot, killed. One got away and got caught later. And they gave him all the murders, but what they went to go do was rob a drug house, And I normally would have been with these cats, but because of wrestling, that day Antonio McKee did not go, and I said I devoted my life to wrestling. I said never again will I put anything in front of wrestling, because that saved my life, because I would have been with those guys. Not because I was a bad person, but because that was the environment that I was brought up around, and that was the energy that was around me, and that's what I gravitated to survive. See, people don't understand when you get caught up like that. They go, how could he be hanging with those gangsters? He's guilty. Mm-hmm. Well, I lived there. I was getting my ass whooped every day. They were jacking me, beating me up, so I decided that instead of joining them, I just hung out with them, and I taught them how to wrestle. I taught them how to hook up stereos. I'm responsible for so much good coming out of the ghetto. And I don't even talk about that stuff. I just talk about beating somebody up in the ring. But absolutely we need these programs for young youth. But we need to teach them the discipline behind that program. Imagine Mike Tyson without boxing running through New York, knocking everybody out. We see what happens when an individual that has that kind of energy or rage is contained. You saw his success. When Gustamano, when he passed, you saw what happened. When you take that structure, when you take that fatherly figure away, you have a psychopath running wild. And we saw that with Mike Tyson. Not that he's a bad person, but he made bad decisions. He put himself in bad positions and bad places where if he would have had that mentor say, Mike, that's not what I want you to do. I want you to be here at this time, over there at that time. Stay away from this. Stay away from that. And thank God that I had wrestling coaches like Jeff Smith, Robert Bundy, and Ray Gamonico to take me in their households and make me part of their family and teach me that structure. Because I definitely didn't have it.
Yeah. Steve?
No, there was, you know, what? How many fights do you see yourself getting from a title shot? You know, you got, you know, you fight here with Volkman. What is your timeline of when you think you will be ready for a title shot?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, coming into this sport, I already feel at 155 pounds, I've never lost a match. Okay, all my fights were at 170 when I was 156, 162. I was fighting guys 180, 190. I never complained. You never hear McKee complain about anything. I just tell it like it is. Now, at 155 pounds, I've not been tested. I've finished every fight at 155, I think, with the exception of two or three. I just can't see how these guys are going to beat me. Now, unfortunately, yes, I could get caught. I could get caught with a punch. I could get dropped. I could get kicked. Those things happen. This is MMA. I play a very cautious game, though. Mm-hmm. But I just don't see who's going to out-wrestle me. No one has the timing. They're better wrestlers, but they don't have the timing. This is what I tell people about GSP. This man has the timing. He understands his timing and his range. He has mastered that, and he made Koscheck look like Koscheck never wrestled in the Division I in his life.
Mm-hmm.
How do you take a Division I guy down? There's a certain energy when you fight that you need to learn. And if you don't learn, you'll fall subject to me, St. Pierre, or Anderson Silva. I've got as long as I choose to fight.
Just explain something for me, because I was reading up a little bit about this, and I'm not sure if you're still involved, but Fight for Kids. Are you still involved with that?
Absolutely. That's what I do. I love it. It's something that I wish I would have had. Look, I got a lot of my wrestling money to go to tournaments from drug dealers. You know, it's funny. I sent a friend of mine that was a drug dealer that supported my wrestling. I sent him a medal while he was incarcerated for every time he would go to jail. Unfortunately, I didn't know that the jails wouldn't allow him to have those medals. So when he got out of, after doing 20 years, he got out, he handed me a box of medals. They were all first place, second place, third place, and I counted $10 on each one of those tournaments because I used to go two weight classes, and it was $10, $8. So I just estimated this man spent $3,000 on me over a year's course in just paying for my tournaments on the weekend.
Wow.
And I said, you know what? I will take a percentage of my fight purse, and I will give that percentage because I don't have a management. Well, you know, I got associate advisors and branding agents and stuff, but I'll take a percentage of my purse, and I will put this program together, and I will involve other athletes. Rampage has been a part of it. He's came and he spoke at some of this stuff for me. So, you know, I'm on the right track. Whether you like me or you hate me, you must respect where I come from and what I do. And I think if people got to know me more so, instead of looking at a thing on the internet, listening to something I said to entertain, like I said, it's funny because when we see a woman on TV and she's in a scene and she's having an intimate moment and she's kissing and making out with a guy on TV, but she's married, right? She's mm-hmm. an actress. You see Antonio McKee say the N-word, or you see Antonio McKee say a cuss word or say something kind of funny or left field, you're so critical of me, but yet you're not critical of this woman who's an actress, and you're so critical of me who is an entertainer mm-hmm. to entertain people that are listening, that you don't overlook those things that you feel like you can rip me apart with. And that makes me angry because, once again, I must educate America on my job as an entertainer. Mm-hmm. So, like I tell my kids, I say, you know, Daddy's an entertainer. When you see that stuff, it's just Daddy talking because you people know who I am. You mm-hmm. people see what I do. You guys see the fighters that come through my gym. No other gym wants them. And what do? I mold these guys into being successful fighters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the school of hard knocks.
Who have you been training with, Antonio, to prepare for your bout with Jacob Volkman?
I've I've been training with God. I've been in the gym with God. I go to gym with God every day. God has given me powers that you guys don't believe and strength that's amazing. Man, I'm so ready for this fight, bro. I'm going to run right out here. People talk about how strong Jacob Volkman is. I want to feel his strength. I want to feel how strong you are, because I never felt a man stronger than me. And anybody who's ever fought me will tell you, I've never felt anything like that. That man is unbelievably strong. His grip, he grabbed me and I couldn't move. I just want to feel another me. Mm-hmm. My only fear of losing this fight is Jacob Volkman is closer to God than I am. Other than that, I fear no man on this planet, and I'm going to introduce the UFC to God.
Well, on that, last question, because we're running up against the clock here, and this has just been an outstanding interview. Let's get you to hype up this fight. What are you going to do to Jacob Volkman on January 1st?
Well, I think I'm going to surprise you all this time, and I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to show you, because I've been talking so much, and I've showed you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take the silent role on this one and show you.
All right.
But I am looking for that bonus. And I would love for you guys to bring me back to talk about how much money I'm going to give away. And if you've got some people out there in Canada or anywhere that want some autographed pictures, you can hit me up on Facebook. I'm more than willing to send out T-shirts that are free. I'm not charging people for T-shirts. I give autographs for free. I'm not charging for autographed pictures. This is my job as an entertainer, and I want to give that to my fans. And I want to thank you guys for taking the time and giving me the airtime to get on a network to put this stuff out for people, because all this does is help build the McKee brand and the good person that I am, not considering the fact that I should answer that question. You said, where did I train for this fight? I trained at Long Beach Polytechnic High School. I'm the head wrestling coach over at Poly High School, where my son attends, and they are the ones that are responsible for me in this fight, because I trained with some high school kids get ready for this fight. And that's that, you know.
Well, you heard it from the Mandingo. Don't get that confused with what Google says.
That Mandingo warrior. I want you to look up the tribe of Mandingos, bro. Please do me that favor.
I will put it out there, absolutely. Antonio McKee, it has been amazing, and we're definitely going to have you on again. And I'm telling you, everybody out there right now, he's on the undercard. Go to UFC.com, watch the undercard just for Antonio McKee, because you are in for a treat. This man has not lost for, 7 years? He should have been in the UFC a long time ago. He is in now, and he is going to turn some heads, mark my word. Antonio, thank you very much, sir.
I love you guys, and God bless everybody, and I'll see you soon, baby.
Thank you, Antonio. Take it easy, brother.
All right.
Antonio McKee. Wow. That was probably one of the best interviews we've done on MMA Sucka, and I was blown away by him. What did you think?
I love interviews in where the guest basically speaks for himself. You know, it's very opinion. You know, you get Greg Maynard, who is more of a laid-back, reserved type of guy, and you get, you know, guys like Antonio McKee, you know, who are, you know, which is a breath of fresh air. You know, guys are open and honest and basically blunt and to the point. They give their experiences, and I didn't know that. I knew a lot about Antonio McKee, but I really didn't know his life story and everything, and I think that's simply amazing. And make sure the fans, you guys do tune in, go to UFC.com, go blast on Twitter, go be like, we want to see Antonio fight on Fight TV. I know Phil Baroni's been doing that as well. Him and his fans are wanting to see him fight on the card on Spike. Go tell the, you know, like, go to Twitter, tell the UFC, we want to see Antonio McKee and Jacob Volkman on the undercard. Because the guy's 32-3 and hasn't lost in 7 years.
Yeah.
One of the most underrated guys in the sport. You know, the guy hasn't got a lot of love. And, you know, it took a controversy from what Guy Mezger said and the guys at HDNet for him to get to this spot. And that's unfortunate, but thankfully he capitalized and now he's got his shot.
Yes.
Wait a second.
Oh, Jeremy here.
I'm going to interrupt you on this, because for the past hour and 20 minutes, I've been watching you drink out of this Lululemon drinking cup, we'll call it, that has a shitload of sayings on it. So why don't you read a few to us?
Okay, well, thank you for putting me on the spot like that. Awesome. Okay, I just wanted to explain something here. I have a Lululemon drinking bottle.
Oh.
Well, it's not mine, dude.
Sure.
No. Sure,
It's the ladies.
Yeah. About you? Well,
okay. Well, I've done yoga a couple times, but I wouldn't go out and buy a Lululemon. But anyway, there's some really interesting sayings on here, like, do one thing a day that scares you. Well, most days I look at producer Jeremy's face, so that pretty much works for me. How about this one? Friends are more important than money.
No.
No, that's so not
true.
Not at all. And then, I mean, I'll do one more here. The conscious brain can only hold one thought at a time. Choose a positive thought.
Okay, so here's my positive thought. Well, it's a little... I don't think it's really that positive, but it's going to become positive because Showdown Joe Ferrero has not responded to my dual, whatever you want to call it. He's not going to respond.
You called him out. You called him out for the next MMA Sucka duel, and Showdown Joe Ferraro, God bless him, has not responded. He is scared.
We can say that. He's scared. He did just have a child, so we'll give him that. We'll call him out for duel number four. But for duel number three, right now, we've had him on the show before. Lazy the Savage is being called out.
From Middle Easy.
From MiddleEasy.com, Lazy the Savage, you're my duel number three.
Wow. And I think he'll accept that.
Sure as hell. I hope so.
I think we've got our MMA Sucka duel three locked down because I know Lazy will accept that.
Well, we know that.
Now, what is the duel?
Okay.
We could explain this, or you could go to MMASucka.com and check out the videos. Let's just say I'm 2-0. I've beaten our friend here, Trev. For the first duel, he had to go to AFC dressed as a woman.
Yeah, so Armageddon Fighting Championship, Steve, I had to dress up as a woman. Basically what MMA Sucka Duel is we pick a card, and so we'll pick all the fights on the main card, and the winner, you know, continues on, and the loser has to do whatever the bet was before. So it's not money, but it usually is something that's embarrassing or that the other person has to do. And so I had to dress up in a dress for Armageddon Fighting Championships. And then Darcy McBride for MMA Sucka Duel 2, he had to dress up as Santa Claus, go out on the street.
In downtown Vancouver,
and had a sign, beat up Santa Claus for $2. And he raised money for cancer research. But it was a great video. Yeah.
Great cause.
Yeah, absolutely. But he lost, and now Jeremy's 2-0, and his head's getting a little big. His big bald head is getting really big, and he's now called out Lazy the Savage because Showdown Joe Ferraro apparently had a kid, and his wife did, and I hope God he didn't have one. That'd be a little weird.
No, I talked to Joe. I forget even when I talked to Joe. I think I talked to Joe last week, and they just had a baby. Yeah.
That's
what he was saying.
So that's his excuse. So anyway, so I love you, Joe. And so he's not taking Jeremy on. So now it's going to be Lazy the Savage. So we hope.
Well, we hope it's Lazy.
Yeah.
And if I do go 3-0 here, we know Lazy the Savage is a videographer.
Yeah.
Amazing videos. So we know if I go 3-0 and I beat Lazy, this video is going to be sick.
Yeah. We're going to make him create a video. We're not sure what the bet's going to be yet. So if anybody out there has an idea for what the bet should be, Facebook us at MMA Sucka. Just look us up on Facebook and tell us what should we get Lazy the Savage to do. Any ideas, Steve? We should get him to do something. What do you, anything off the top of the head?
I say you get him to run around naked around Vancouver.
Well, he's not from Vancouver, but
where's
any
he from?
City. Yeah. Well, I think he lives in California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guys in California like that stuff, so you can have him do something like that.
I don't know. Do jiu-jitsu naked with Nick Diaz? No, that wouldn't happen.
Talk about Nick Diaz really quick. What do you guys think of the situation with him and Mayhem Miller? Because I've been told yesterday by Michael Fromowitz from Strike Force that fight will never happen. That fight will not happen.
Yeah, well, because I guess it was some weight issues. I mean, nobody could agree on a catch weight. Was that sort of the issue? That's what I heard.
Yeah, because they were saying first 178, then 182, and then now I'm getting told that Nalbias is trying to open up to a fight at 85, but I don't think the fight should happen. There's better fights out there for Nick Diaz.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no point. Mayhem Miller's got one more fight out of his contract. This is his last fight for Strikeforce.
Yeah.
We talked about Dana White wants him to come
Dana's
to the, he'll take him
yeah.
in the UFC. And I think it's more enough to get his name out there. Say, win, lose, or draw, it's going to make him look better, and then he can go to the UFC and he can go do what he wants there.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing as well, that he's got one fight left and then pretty much is going to jump ship. So, I mean, why not? I mean, he's marketable. Whether you like him or not, he's a marketable
exactly.
guy, and that's what the UFC likes, right?
Exactly. You know, is he a great fighter? He's a good fighter, but he's not a guy you would consider in the top 10 at 85. But, you know, he's a, like you said, he's a marketable guy, and it's, you know, kind of what I see the UFC starting to do, you know, like what they did with Sean McCorkle, put him in the co-main event, and based on all the hype he was getting on the internet and the interviews he's been doing, and look what happened.
Speaking,
you know, so.
Speaking about, let's quickly go here, because we have about 5 minutes left, but I just want to quickly ask you about UFC 125 and the other Diaz brother, Nate Diaz. He's fighting Kim. Just your thoughts on this card, actually, and that fight specifically.
We'll start with that. That's got a chance. It's got a really good chance to be fighting tonight. You know, you look at Nate Diaz, and you kind of go, you've got a guy who's very, he's an athletic guy. He's great off his back. He's great standing up. And Kim, I'm more of a stand-up guy. You know, it's going to be an action-packed fight. It's going to be a stand-up fight. I see Kim winning that fight, though, by decision.
Yeah.
It's not going to go, it's going to go 3 rounds. You
so
know,
what's the fight? What's the fight on the card that you're looking forward to the most?
Brian Stann and Chris Leben.
Really?
So, how good, how did the DUI in that situation affect Chris Leben? And that's the million-dollar question. 2010 was a great year for Chris Leben. Went into Ultimate Fight Night. He beats Aaron Simpson. Takes a fight on less than basically 10 days notice and has a fight of the year candidate against Akiyama.
Mm-hmm.
Then he has an unfortunate DUI, and now he's fighting. And, you know, people are saying, you know, another win here by Leben, and you could talk about Leben in that category for 80, fight for the title at 85, with another win or two.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Stann coming, the former WEC champion, coming down, going down to 85. You know, his last couple wins have been really impressive, and, you know, Stan's got a lot to prove here. You know, can he? With a win here, I think a win here for either guy, and you can talk about cracking into the top 10 and with another fight or two, they can be challenging for the title. So I think that's a really interesting fight. The title fight, like we talked about earlier, you know, I think Frankie Edgar is going to win with the speed in his boxing. He's going to stuff a lot of Gray Maynard's takedowns, and he's going to make Gray Maynard hit him, which I don't think Gray Maynard's going to be able to hit Frankie, and Frankie's just going to counter him to death all day, and Frankie Edgar wins by decision.
Yeah. The fight I'm looking forward to is Guida Gomi.
That's the one I'm looking forward to as well.
I forgot that it was even. I can't even believe it. It's a Chicago guy. I'm kind of disappointed in myself here, but
yeah.
That's a stand. That's the 3-round slug war. You know you're going to get. You know, are we going to see the Gomi that we saw in August against Tyson Griffin and what we've seen in Japan, or are we going to get the Gomi that we've seen against Kenny Florian? And we've seen right before he left Japan and came to the UFC. It's a question that fight ends in a knockout. But the question is, who's going to get that knockout first? And I'm going with Chicago's own Clay Guida.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an exciting fight just because we all know by now what Clay Guida likes to do. He pushes the pace. And Gomi, I've seen him in fights with guys like that before. And he likes to fight like that as well. He likes to go full throttle, full out. So I think that's my pick for fight of the night, and I'm definitely looking for UFC 125.
Look out for the fact that also Greg Jackson has been a great influence on Guida, and I think it's another reason why I think Guida wins that fight, and he will finish.
All right, you heard it. Steve Mulhassan, Fight Club Chicago. And by the way, just before I let you go, how are those Blackhawks doing, by the way?
I'm going to say this for the first time ever, no comment.
All right, you know what, Steve, thank you for joining us today, man. We're up against the clock. We're ending this right now. I would love to come on your show one day again. I love it, and we would love to have you back on here as well. So thank you for joining us.
Definitely. Thank you. And thank you guys for inviting me to come on. It was definitely a pleasure. Make sure you guys tune in this coming Tuesday. We got big names. We got Sean McCorkle, Matt Mitrione, James Toney, and a whole lot more, so make sure you guys do tune in.
And how do people tune in?
They can go to sportstownchicago.com/fightclub, F-I-G-H-T-C-L-U-B. Go to Facebook, search the Fight Club Chicago, and go to Twitter. We are at Fight Club Chi. And we are starting a YouTube channel, and I'm hoping to have it up by no later than Tuesday. It'll
awesome.
Be Fight Club Chicago.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. And that is the end of MMA Sucker Radio. We will not be on next week because you should be spending with your family and not listening to internet radio. So until the new year, everybody, good luck. Merry Christmas. And I'm out.
You're listening to MMA Sucker Radio on MMASucker.com and MMACanada.net. VIP.